Well, we got Mr. David Faraday joining us now. Faraday, welcome to the golf shop.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm delighted to be at the golf shop. I'm actually at the shooting range at the minute, but it's very similar in a lot of ways.
It is, because if you go a little off target, somebody's going to get hurt.
Well, there's that. Although, in this case, it'll be a cow. You know, and there's an upside to that, you know, in terms of hamburger.
There is.
Yes.
Well, that's kind of, that might be a little frightening, you on the in the shooting range. I'm sure you're a crack shot, though.
I just shot about a 4-inch group at 500 yards here. Yeah, I'm really a whole lot better at this than I am at golf. But then again, I don't play golf, so I probably would be.
Well, the only thing I could probably do at 500 yards is not see what's happening, because I'm probably blind at that distance. So that's all I have going for me. You know, I've been catching up on your show, the Faraday Show on Golf Channel, and I have to say, your interview with Ken Venturi has to be one of the most unbelievable interviews so far to date. Just from my standpoint, the things that we learned about Ken and about the good old days was just phenomenal for me.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. It was a very important interview for me to do because I love Kenny very much. And, you know, he was such an integral part of the start of my broadcasting career. You know, he kind of took me under his wing and put me in his bottle and really looked after me in a variety of ways that just and the stories that he would tell. I would ask him to tell a story that I'd heard, you know, 30 or 40 times, you know, in front of a group of people just to see their reaction to it. He told stories in black and white back in the days when, you know, cigarettes were good for you.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, back when they had vitamins in them.
That's right.
And the fact that he actually played golf with not Frank Sinatra, but Francis Sinatra.
Francis. Oh, absolutely. There's a kind of a Sicilian connection there with the Rat Pack. You know, Kenny played, on Round Hard with Joey Bishop and Dean Martin. And, well, Bing Crosby wasn't really, you know, a part of that. He was the Baron Nelson to Ben Hogan, if you like.
Exactly. Well, and, you know, are there now going to be people clamoring to get on your show that are on tour now? Because, you know, you interview Bubba Watson, it gets put on the air, and then he wins the Masters that week.
Well, you know, we interviewed Luke Donald, and he went to number one.
Right.
I interviewed Don Cheadle, and he got his own series and then had it renewed. I interviewed Charles Barkley, and he lost 38 pounds. And basically, there's so much upside to being asked stupid questions by me.
Well, but the only bad thing about Charles Barkley is that, yeah, he lost all that weight, but apparently he's now cross-dressing.
Oh, dear God.
Have you seen the commercial?
I haven't seen the commercial, but I did say to him, I said, Chuck, you know the best part about losing weight? He said, what? I said, putting it back on again.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the commercial, he's wearing a dress now in one of those Weight Watcher commercials.
Oh, dear God, I thought that was Dennis Rodman's job.
So you might have to have another conversation with him and straighten him out a little bit.
Well, straightening, of course, being a, you know, forgive the pun, I'm sure.
So yeah, so your phone's got to be lighting up with guys that are saying, you know what, I need to be on your show because I need a little help. I need a little mojo going on.
Well, you're the only one that has my number.
Well, that's true. I actually broke 80 yesterday, which for a guy that used to be a +3 handicap and now is a 5, I guess that's a start.
Yeah. I'm sorry, say that again, you broke up?
No, I was saying for a guy that used to be a +3 handicap and now I'm a 5 and I broke 80, just making contact with you this week is obviously helping my golf game already.
You were +3?
I was a +3, now I'm a 5.
Well, you know, 5's pretty good. Yeah. You know, I was the best 5 handicap ever to play the tour.
So you're telling me I should turn pro?
Well, immediately, you know, and then start drinking heavily.
I'll remember that.
My advice to you is, the famous words.
So, sitting in the tower behind 15 green last week, what was probably the greatest shot you saw in the 2012 Masters?
Greatest shot I saw on 15 or in 12?
Yeah, just on 15, on what you were covering.
Well, what I was covering, I mean, I covered Louis Oosthuizen's Albatross at number 2.
That's true.
I think you'd have to go a long way to beat that.
Right.
And, you know, we went to him live, and You know, that ball, when it took one bounce and got up onto the green, I got real excited, you know, and Lance, my producer, was kind of yelling at me, you know, don't go over the top, don't go over the top. And, I, you know, so I stopped, and if ever there was a reason to go over the top, that would have been it.
I was screaming right on my couch.
Yeah.
I mean, I for some reason, I'm with you. When that ball got about halfway across the green, it looked it never looked like it wasn't going to go in the hole.
Oh, it had the look.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny how, you know, some shots will do that. You know, they just, Tiger's chip shot at 16 from behind the green a few years ago, you know, had that same mother of pearl. That's actually going to go in, you know.
Yeah.
It's really going to happen. And you just had that feeling. But, you know, 15 is such a great place to sit. I've been there for 15 years, and I turn around in my seat, and I can see 16 green. I'm almost on the front of 16 green.
Right.
So, I mean, you talk about a great place to watch the Masters.
And it seemed like, it seemed to me like there was a lot more guys that seemed to bail out right on 15 than we usually see. I don't know. It was just an observation on my part, but it just seemed like, for some reason, everybody was missing way right and actually getting some good breaks.
On the last day, you mean?
I mean, just in general, all 4 days. It just seemed like everybody was bailing almost right of the bunker and into the crowd for some reason.
Well, the water at 16 was in play. The firmer the golf course got, you know, so that, you know, if you're trying to get it on that green, it's a fascinating hole. It's kind of like 13 because you can almost always reach it. And sometimes it takes a lot of nerve to lay up because you're going to lay up with a wedge and then have the hardest wedge shot in the world. But if you hit it over the back of 15, then you can chip it into the water that you were trying to avoid in the first place.
Right.
You know, so it's a real conundrum. And you can see them standing at the top of the hill scratching their head and, you know, picking their nose and trying to, you know, pretend they're on the 16th tee already.
So you know, I mean, you must have had an easy 2 weeks. I mean, you get to sit in the, you know, sit down for the Masters, sit in the tower, and then you don't have to do CBS's coverage at the Heritage this week. I mean, God, what do you do with yourself for 2 weeks?
That was a bit of a shock to me. I got to be honest with you. Not doing the Heritage. I've always done it,
yeah.
And I'm not sure why I'm not there. Just the way the thing worked out. But I'll tell you that it may seem easy, you know, the Masters week, but it isn't.
Right.
It's a lot of work and, you know, a lot of pressure. You know, the fact that, you know, your voice is on that telecast, you know, to me, it's really important. The players have a different sense when they get there. And, you know, so do the broadcasters. People often ask me, you know, how I've lasted 15 years there when McCord was sent down the road. Well, you know, I'm actually capable of being a little bit different. You know, he's not. If he tried to be different and anything but the way he is, you get 15 minutes of silence followed by the sound of his head exploding.
I totally agree with that, yeah. I mean, it is hard, though. I mean, it does. You probably have to think a little bit more about what you're saying, realistically.
Well, you know, there's usually a gap between, you know, when I'm, you know, they come to one of my holes, 2 and 15, you know, there'll be a gap before I start talking because I'll think, you know, I go, no, I can't say that. And then I'll go, no, I can't say that either. So it's usually about the third thing that I've thought of.
Well, but everybody has to do that because there's certain words that you have to say and certain phrases that you have to use, and it's different for everybody in a sense.
Well, it is, but I mean, you don't have to. Really, I mean, that's kind of an urban myth, you know, that sort of thing where, you know, patrons and, you know, a lot of it's just proper golf terminology.
Right.
You know, they're bunkers. They're not sand traps. It's over the back. You know, it's not through the green. Through the green it means all over the golf course, you know,
right.
Or anywhere on the golf course. It's, you know, front nine, second nine. We don't say backside because that's what you sit on. Really, they do so many things so much better than every other tournament.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's you know, the one question I always ask everybody when they go out, when they've said they've been out there, I said, did you find a weed anywhere on the golf course? And the answer is usually no.
A weed?
Yeah, a weed,
you
anywhere.
You're joking.
I know.
the maintenance facility there with all the, you know, the equipment in it, there's little rows of hospital beds with, they're like about the size of a matchbox with grass blades. There's little thermometers sticking out of their mouths, like lying there. You know, just nurse them back to health, put them back in.
Oh, so who do we have to look forward to on the Faraday Show coming up?
Well, We have got, who we got coming up?
I know you have the President Bill.
President Bill, who was wonderful. I've got the Donald. I've got Samuel L. Jackson. Fuzzy, I'm really looking forward. I'm interviewing Fuzzy, I think, on Monday or Tuesday. And I've got a lot of things to talk about with Fuzzy. I love him, and you know, I think he's got a raw deal over the years. So yeah. It may be a little controversial, but I could give a rat's ass.
By the way, I feared for your life in the Michelle Wie episode because I cringed when you went diving into the first fountain. I really did.
Oh, yeah, nobody told me it was only 9 inches deep. You know, it's called fountain hopping, and apparently they jump into the fountain. You know, it isn't a massive belly flop, of course. You know, once I'd done it once, they needed it from four different angles.
Right.
So, I mean, I ended up with, you know, cuts on my knees and elbows, and actually did a face plant onto a GoPro at one stage.
That doesn't sound fun.
But if I'm not bleeding, it's not an episode.
Well, true. And I'm assuming that after you got done with the tree costume that they had to send it out for cleaning because that you rolled in dirt and stones and grass.
Oh, what was on the outside of it was the least of the problem, believe me. Yeah.
It's a little warm in those things, isn't it?
No, it's not good, yeah. And I got the old tree. You know, it was like a tree from several years ago.
The retired tree.
Yes, yeah. It was very sort of, it was full of zip ties and pokey bits and all sorts of crap.
And probably leftovers from the person who had a tough Friday night and was at a football game on Saturday morning, I'm assuming.
I imagine. So, yeah. I mean, there was a set of twig and berries in there.
And you might have left something behind, too. And who knows?
Oh, yeah.
But that had to be fun, being able to. And I'm sure it actually looked like Michelle had a blast actually putting the costume on. I guess that's when you're at college, that's kind of one of your things, is that you always want to experience being the mascot.
Well, she's a kid, you know. I mean, people forget that we've had her for 10 years. I mean, she's not, I think she's 23 now. I mean, 10 years she's been around. And if you think of the pressure that she's been under and the spotlight, and I mean, she goes back to finish at Stanford and she's got an ordinary dorm room with a random dorm mate. She could be living in a $1 million apartment and doing it, you know, the Beverly Hills way, but she's not. She's just an ordinary kid, and it was really refreshing to see that side of her.
Well, yeah, and I think that's one of the things that your show accomplishes, too, is that we learned so much about Michelle Wie that I guarantee you a lot of people have a different opinion about her now.
Yeah, well, that's my objective. I'm delighted to hear you say that because I interview people like Sergio Garcia, for instance. I've known him since he came out. Let me rephrase that. I've known him since he turned pro. He was about 11. And, you know, the main problem was getting him to do his math homework. And he's always had that fire, that passion and the need, you know, to win, kind of like Seve. And if he was, you know, not allowed to speak for 30 minutes after each round, people would have an entirely different impression of him.
Yeah.
But his heart kidnaps his mouth every now and then. And, you know, he sounds, you know, negative and whiny, but that's not who he is. And, he's really kind, generous, and you know, like a fun-loving 30-year-old now, I guess he is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just wanted people to see that side of him, you know, the side that I've known for, you know, the best part of 15 years.
Yeah.
It's just, he was one of those players that made you smile every time you saw him on the golf course. He looked like he was having so much fun.
Yep. Huh? Well, David, I'm gonna let you get back to doing some shooting, and we'll catch up with you later on in the year. Appreciate you coming on.
All right. My pleasure.